You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
At the start of 2002, Thad Roberts' future seemed bright. He'd secured a much-sought-after internship at NASA's Johnson Space Center, where he could work while he finished college, had impressed his superiors, and was on his way to realizing his lifelong dream of becoming an astronaut. But instead of becoming the first man to set foot on Mars, Mr. Roberts ended up spending 7 years in federal prison after the FBI caught him trying to sell moon rocks he had stolen from a NASA lab. Best-selling author Ben Mezrich tells Mr. Roberts' story in his latest book, his 12th, called Sex on the Moon. It's published by Doubleday. I'm very pleased that it has brought him to our show today. Hello.
Hey, thanks so much.
Now, this book reads like the plot of a Hollywood thriller, and I understand that Sony has already bought the movie rights. Do you have any idea of who'll be starring in it or when it's scheduled to be released or whether they'll change the title?
Well, hopefully they won't change the title. They tend to change my titles a lot. But I sold it to the same producers of The Social Network. So Scott Rudin and Kevin Spacey and Dana Brunetti and Mike DeLuca are making the movie with Sony. And I don't know who it'll star, but it's got to be a young guy who's good-looking but also geeky. So,
well, the Social Network, your title on your bestseller, 2009, was The Accidental Billionaires. Is the title change easier to take when the film is a box office success and wins 3 Academy Awards?
Well, you know, at first I hated that Social Network title and I wanted it to be The Accidental Billionaires. But the Oscars made it, you know, a lot easier to take.
And then there is that movie 21 from another one of your books, which you called Bringing Down the House. That also did well in the box office. So do you have a secret method for being able to figure out which stories can be turned into popular movies?
You know, when I set out to choose a story to write, I am looking at it like a movie. So I think of it cinematically. It's got to be a young person who pulls off a scheme, you know, money, sex, betrayal, all the things that Hollywood kind of looks for. So it's been a great link for me.
Well, slightly odd young men who are trying to beat the odds to get what they want.
Yeah, that's my genre. I mean, that's what I'm excited by, and I want to live vicariously through their stories. That's what I write about.
But in this case, didn't Thad Roberts reach out to you?
You know, his mutual friends of his who were fans of my work, that's how everyone reaches me now. I get 20 to 30 pitches a week now ever since the
Social
Network.
Hey, I did something really stupid.
Yeah, I'm a college kid and I just stole this thing. I want to talk to you. I get that a lot. And these guys called me and said this kid had stolen a safe full of moon rocks from NASA. I had never heard this story before. And so I got on the next plane. It was crazy.
Was he still in prison when you first met him?
He had just gotten out. He was on probation. And I was meeting a guy who'd literally been in prison 7.5 years. So I met him in a crowded hotel lobby because I was scared a little bit. And he was the nicest guy. He just had done something utterly stupid and crazy.
But were you surprised that he wanted you to write about him and draw new attention to his crime? If I had committed a federal crime and been locked up for 7 years, probably the last thing I'd do is to ask somebody to write a book about it after I was released.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting point. And it is something I wonder when I first meet him. I think in his case, you know, he felt like everyone kind of knew who he'd meet would ask him why he was in prison. And I think he wanted people to know that he wasn't this murderer or this guy who'd done this horrible thing. He had done something that to him was like out of love. It was a college prank. He stole a safe of moon rocks. I think he felt that was a story to share. From my perspective, it was something pretty wild. I mean, it's something, you know, it's not just this robbery. It's this much deeper thing.
Well, do you have to agree to any conditions up front to get the information you need in a story like this?
Not with that. Not in this case. I mean, in this case, you know, he knew that what I'd write, he wouldn't all like at all. Parts of it were going to say things that he didn't like, and parts of it would say stuff he did. And he had to open up to me over a very long period of time. But I got all the FBI files, and I interviewed all the other people. So.
And he didn't ask to review it.
He didn't ask to review it. He obviously was excited to see it. He wanted to see what I'd written. And when he read it, there were things he didn't like and things he liked.
Does he stand to gain anything financially?
No.
Your subtitle is The Amazing Story Behind the Most Audacious Heist in History. And although several reviewers have felt that was a bit of an overreach, pretty much everyone agrees that it's a fascinating story.
You know, it is. There are certain reviewers who do not like my style. Janet Maslin is one of them who really dislikes it. But overall, you know, what I do is this sort of nonfiction written as a movie or written as a thriller. So it's a true story. All of the information is true. I interview everyone. I get the thousands of pages of court and FBI documents. And then I write it like a movie. And there are certain reviewers who are never going to like that. But overall, the audience loves it.
And she used to be a movie reviewer, don't forget.
Yeah, that's right. You know, she has a problem with me. She's did the same thing with Accident of a Billionaire. She hated it, and then she loved The Social Network, which was very similar to the book, and then she hated this, and hopefully she'll love the movie.
So let's talk about Thad Roberts. He grew up in a strict Mormon household in Salt Lake City. Mm-hmm. But then was disowned by his parents and kicked out of his house after he admitted that he'd had premarital sex with his girlfriend, Sonia?
Yeah, he grew up in a very, very tough Mormon, very fundamentalist Mormon family. One of the opening scenes is he's waiting outside his house because he thinks his father's getting the shotgun to kill him because he confessed to premarital sex. He essentially got banished to the basement and then kicked out of his home.
But he married Sonia. Wasn't that acceptable to the parents?
They went to the wedding, and that's the last they saw him, basically, and said goodbye there.
So, but then he was a kid, and he had to find a way to pay the rent.
And... Right. And so he was at University of Utah, but working on the side. He pretty much did a few years, had to drop out, and then got back in. But he had nothing. I mean, he had no money, no family. It was just him and his wife at the time, and they were 18. And then he saw a folder marked astronaut in a career center and decided that's what he wanted to do.
Well, a lot of people would like to become astronauts. Not now, obviously, right. But for a long time, that was a fantasy job. Very few wind up actually getting on the astronaut track.
Yeah. Well, he was, you know, he reformed his whole life. He became a triple major, you know, geology, physics, and astronomy. He learned five languages. He learned how to fly airplanes. He became a scuba dive instructor or expert. He would go on paleontological digs. Anything he thought an astronaut might need, he trained himself. And then he got into this co-op program, which is this incredibly prestigious program. College kids spend three semesters at NASA working with astronauts as if they work there.
So that's an internship, in effect.
Well, it's beyond internship. There are interns and then there are co-ops. And a lot of co-ops end up working at NASA. So he was really on a track. And everyone I interviewed who worked with him said that he was a star there. I mean, he was known by everyone as the guy who could be an astronaut.
And this is really competitive. One out of 40 qualified applicants actually get in.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. And most of those kids are all engineers. He was not an engineer. He was a real outdoorsy kind of physical person, yeah.
So he's excelling. Everybody loves him.
Right.
He comes across in some ways as very straight arrow, but didn't he have a girlfriend on the side?
Well, his marriage started to fall apart. He became this social star at NASA, and he became the chair of all the social events. And he met this girl, a young girl. She was an intern. In the book, I call her Rebecca. I had to change her name because she asked me to. She didn't want this story to come out.
They're no longer together.
No. She got rid of him as soon as he went to prison. But he fell madly in love with her, and she fell madly in love with him. And they knew each other a period of 3 weeks before he committed this crime.
Is the crime connected to the relationship?
Well, according to him, she was the catalyst. He had already been planning it, but she was the reason he did it, he says.
Well, you write that he created a plan early on in his NASA career to steal this collection of moon rocks that NASA considered trash,
right?
Because they'd been used in experiments, and to then sell it for a huge sum of money. But he tells himself that the plan is only a hypothetical mind game.
Right. So he's a bit of a delusional guy. I mean, he has this whole, you know, fantasy life that he lives in his head. And, you know, he sees these moon rocks, and they're the most valuable thing on Earth. A single gram was once sold for $5 million. And there's a safe in the lunar lab that's essentially trash because they've already been experimented on. And he thinks if I stole that, it would be worth, you know, who knows. And then,
but does NASA consider them trash?
No. And NASA considers them they're used, so they're not going to be used again. But they're still valuable because there's only 840 pounds in existence.
Well, you must have spoken to him about his motivation for the theft. Do you believe that at first he'd just been playing a game, that he saw this as a college prank?
Well, I don't think he would have done it without a reason. I don't think just taking it to sell it was going to get him to do it because he knew how much he was going to give up. But when he met this girl and he was this James Bond figure to her and she thought of him as James Bond and he's hanging out with her and finally he tells her, I'm thinking of stealing these moon rocks, and she says, oh, that's romantic, let's do it. I really think that's it. That's the moment. I mean, that was the trigger that really said, okay, now I'm going to make this happen.
My guest is Ben Mezrich. His latest book, Sex on the Moon, The Amazing Story Behind the Most, he says, Most Audacious Heist in History, published by Doubleday. The night of the theft, Thad Roberts didn't end up stealing the moon rocks that had been classified as trash, but instead took a 600-pound safe full of moon rock samples that belong to Dr. Everett Gibson, who had been his mentor at NASA. Did he explain to you why he decided to take the safe, which contained not only the moon rocks but 30 years' worth of Dr. Gibson's research notes?
And also a piece of Mars was in there too. So what happened was the lunar lab became – it was too hard to get into the lunar lab. He realized there was also a safe in his boss's office. Everett Gibson is an incredible scientist, one of the Apollo scientists, a genius who had been working at NASA forever. And Thad figured, I can take the safe out of his office. These are used rocks as well. He's already experimented on them. He's already had his time with them. I'm going to take them. Thad claims there were no notebooks in the safe, that Everett Gibson, notes weren't in there.
Everett Gibson gave tearful testimony at the trial about how he'd been damaged by the loss of his life's work, all those notes.
Right. And you know what? That's the reason Thad got so much time in jail, because, the judge and Gibson believed that what Thad had done was horrible and had ruined this man's life. And, I asked Thad many, many times over the year, and he maintains that there were no notebooks. And
so they've never turned up.
They never turned up. The FBI didn't find them. But, there's no reason that Gibson would say something that wasn't true. I mean, this man is an eminent scientist, so who knows what happened there. But Thad definitely paid the price for that.
Well, Thad paid the price for a lot of stupid things he did. Before he took the safe, he found a potential buyer for them in Belgium by advertising on the internet.
Yes, this is right.
For someone who's supposed to be so brilliant, that struck me as a naive and risky way to find a buyer. Doesn't NASA teach its interns that there's no privacy on the internet?
I mean, it's completely crazy. So he steals a 600-pound safe of moon rocks. He spreads them on a bed and has sex with his girlfriend on the moon. And then he essentially goes on the internet and sends out an email.
Wasn't that a rather rocky thing to do?
It's uncomfortable, isn't it? It was uncomfortable. It was a strange thing to do. But he literally goes on the internet and sends out an email and says, does anybody want to buy a moon rock? It's like the Nigerian Prince Khan that everyone, anyone would think that was stupid. But Thad, he's not this master criminal. He really isn't. He's this smart kid who did something crazy and didn't think it through.
And the buyer, who's a mineral collector named Axel Emmerman, understood immediately that any sale of moon rocks would be either a crime or a hoax, so he contacted the FBI.
Yeah, Axel Emmerman is this great character. He's this guy who's never been out of Antwerp, Belgium in his life. He believes very strongly in right and wrong. He considers himself like the Tom Hanks character in Catch Me If You Can. He sees something that he assumes is a crime, so he contacts the Tampa FBI. And the FBI at first doesn't even know if this is a crime. They don't know anything about it, and they start to look into it, and they start to realize this guy might really be stealing real moon rocks.
Now, he had help from his girlfriend, Rebecca, and another friend, Sharon, both NASA interns. Did they spend any time in jail?
So he had two female accomplices, two young girls, and he—
He needed strong women to help him carry 600-pound safe.
Exactly. He took the fall for them, so in court— he accepted the charge of being the ringleader, of having convinced them to do it, and they both got probation. He went to jail.
Have you spoken to any of the scientists at NASA?
So NASA did not like that I was writing this book, and they basically told everyone not to speak to me. So I went, I showed up, and I did this inside tour of NASA. I assumed that they would cross-check my name, but they never did. I was wandering through NASA. Thad was texting me and saying, oh, there's a door in the back of that room. Go through that door or have a seat. That's where I used to sit in the cafeteria. So I had the ultimate guided tour. And I did talk to a lot of people, off the record. And Axel Emmerman gave me some wonderful information that was passed to him via scientists as well. Because the truth is, this is a very pro-NASA book. I love NASA. I wish we were funding it enormously now. It's sad for me to see NASA going the way it's going, because there's nothing greater than going to the moon or going to Mars.
Have we learned much from these rocks?
Well, it's not even about that. Yes, we've learned a little bit here and there, but what it's about the American spirit. It's about, striving to do something great. What kid isn't blown away by meeting an astronaut? And that's something great. And so I wrote this book, and even though it's about this crime at NASA, I don't think when NASA reads it, they'll dislike it.
So what's Thad Roberts doing now? Obviously, he and a lot of other people have to give up their dreams of being astronauts.
Well, he doesn't want to give it up. He still wants to go to space. That's still his goal.
I don't think NASA will be very amenable.
He won't be doing it there. He's hoping in the private sector, but he's getting his PhD. You know, he's back out of prison. He taught astronomy while in prison. He was known as Moon Rock. That's what everyone called him. You know, and he's trying to put his life back together.
And what's happening with you? Has anybody called you from prison with a proposal for another book?
I have been getting a lot of calls, all sorts of places, a lot of emails, a lot of Twitter tweets. It's tweeting now nonstop. But I don't have my next big project yet. I'm still waiting for that college kid to come up with that great scheme.
Ben Mezrich is the New York Times bestselling author of The Accidental Billionaires and Bringing Down the House. In addition to 9 other books, there have been motion pictures of 2 and soon to be 3. The latest, Sex on the Moon, it is published by Doubleday. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.